You're listening to the Puck Authority Podcast, your go-to source for all things hockey.
Welcome to this episode of the Puck Authority Podcast. This is a very special episode, and we return from a hiatus in a very special way. On today's episode, I'm joined by David Siss, the CEO of the Puck Authority, as always. And then joining us today, a very special guest, and that is Igor Larionov of the Cunlin Red Star. Igor, thank you so much for joining us today on this episode. We really appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be a part of this. I am always excited to talk to, you know, just hopefully grow the game a little bit.
Absolutely. So let's start there when we talk about growing the game, because again, you play overseas in China. And so I want to kind of get your sense of, you know, how hockey is operated around the COVID-19 pandemic and what that experience was like for you, because this is something that is unlike anything we've ever experienced before. So, you know, as a hockey player playing through that, what was it that you and your teammates kind of went through this year?
So basically, because of the pandemic, our team was moved from China to Moscow so that everyone would be sort of like in one country, because travel's easier logistically. That's an easier way of doing things. And in terms of everyday life in Russia, things are always pretty normal. You know, there was never really any restrictions, anything too serious. We got COVID tested every 3 days, which we would come into the locker room. There'd be a doctor or whatever, a nurse waiting for us there. They do our COVID tests, and then later on the day we get the results. But everyone on the team had COVID at one point. I think 97% of the league had COVID, so pretty much everyone had it. And then at a certain point, we all tested positive for antibodies, and they were high enough where we didn't have to do any more COVID tests. So at that point, things were pretty regular. But no, it was kind of weird, because some kind of republics or states in Russia, there would be a lot of cases and there'd be no fans. And then the next night you play a back-to-back in a different republic where there's like no cases, and it's a sold out 10,000 fans at the game. So it's kind of weird mentally as a player when one night you have to prepare for a game with no fans, and it's, you know, it's a lot more difficult to play in that environment. But then you go into this crazy atmosphere, fans cheering, it's loud, you know, so much energy. And it's just, it takes you through all these different emotions, knowing how lucky you are to be able to play in front of fans, because when the stadium's empty, it's a whole different, you know, whole different ballgame.
Right. So let's talk about the fans for a minute, because I don't know if that information on a daily basis was passed along to the players, but, you know, number wise, if depending on how informed you are, what did that look like in terms of how they do it compared to North America, where we have literally no fans in most cities and most countries, again, being the United States and Canada?
So it was very weird, because my team, Cunlin, we were in Moscow, but we were sort of like on the outskirts of Moscow. So it's like, it's sort of like, let's say there's a downtown city and then you sort of go to the suburbs. That's basically where our rink was located at. And in our region, we weren't allowed any fans. But then when we play Spartak Moscow right in downtown, they would allow, I think, 25%, but they would, you know, almost go half the fans. Like, they just wouldn't really check. So it was kind of weird, because other places it would be like 60% and it would be sold out, you know? So like, it's kind of, they had restrictions, but in reality, it was mostly just like, if you got in, you got in, and they really didn't care too much.
Right. And as a player, you know, was there a sense at first of, you know, hesitancy as a player in terms of safety and, you know, kind of that being passed down from the crowd seats in, you know, towards the players on the ice? Or was that just, you know, you focus on the game and that was it?
Honestly, going over, the first thing the GM told me when I talked to him, he's like, have you had COVID yet? I said, no. He's like, well, you're going to get it. So at that point, I was like, all right, there's no hiding it. So I actually did pretty well. I didn't get sick for, I think, my first 3 months there, which was like a major win. I think I was on the leaderboard. We had a leaderboard in like the locker room, who was able to go the longest without getting sick. But no, I did pretty well in terms of that. But, you know, going in, you knew it was going to happen, because in a country like Russia, it's difficult, because, you know, now everyone's really wearing masks, or like, we were traveling so much. So eventually you'd pick it up somehow. But honestly, I wasn't too worried about it, because before I even got there, my dad had it and he was like, oh, I didn't even feel it. So like, figuring genetically, I should be fine in terms of that. And, you know, I had it and it wasn't too big of a deal.
And when was it? You said obviously 97% of the league had it. When did it really hit your team, if you don't mind me asking? When was, I guess, what was also the mentality like there? Was there a sense of general worry there? Or was it, as you were saying, that it hasn't really, it didn't affect you guys too much? The Republic, a lot of different areas in the in Russia weren't too worried about it. So did it affect the team a lot?
We honestly took it more with like a sense of humor, as like if someone would come in with like COVID symptoms, we'd be like, well, have a nice 2 week vacation, like so that kind of thing. But we had three or four different outbreaks before I got there. We had, because there was trouble bringing in a lot of guys over because of like restrictions and passports and all these things. So at the start of the year, there was all Russian guys who just were basically on tryout contracts, just filling up spots. And then when all the North Americans came in, I was, I think, in the third wave of North Americans coming in. The first wave, everyone got sick. So I think a couple of games were even canceled. And then they all got back. And the second wave came in, they all got sick. And the third wave, which I came in and I think two other guys, it took us 3 months to get sick because pretty much everyone was already sick at that point. So honestly, it's weird how it works. A couple of guys, they never got sick, get tested for antibodies, and all of a sudden they have the highest antibody count on the team. So like it's weird how that works, but I mean, we were just looking at it like as a day by day thing. Like it is what it is. If you get sick, you try to do your best, obviously, because as funny as it sounds to have a 2 week vacation, it's not funny when you get back and you after doing nothing for 2 weeks. So that was the biggest thing.
Right. So with that, let's take a look at the quarantine. How did you spend it once you did get sick? And was it hard for you to get back onto the ice following that? I mean, because everyone reacts to this very differently. COVID-19 is a funny thing. Some don't feel this at all. Some get so sick they're in the hospital. Then there are just some that experience general fatigue. So where did you fall on that trend? And what was the return to play like?
So it was really weird because when I got sick, I didn't really have any severe symptoms. First, my mom was feeling some symptoms, and I thought, maybe, I gave it to her, she gave it to me. And I woke up one day, I had a low grade fever, and I text my team doctor. We had a game against Chelyabinsk, I think, in a couple hours. I text him, like, I have a fever. Like, I don't know. Like, what do you think I should do? He's like, just stay home. The team's going to Latvia tomorrow. If you go with us to Latvia and you test positive there, you have to stay there for 2 weeks in a hotel. So he's basically like, just stay home, and when we get back, we'll do the tests and everything. So basically, one of my buddies who came over with me at the same time, he got his symptoms a day later. So when he got into Latvia, he tested positive, and he had to stay in the hotel for 2 weeks. And then once he was feeling better, he needed to have two negative tests in a row. And for almost 10 days, he couldn't get two negative tests in a row. He was completely fine, but the test would come back positive. So he was in a hotel room for I think 25 days doing absolutely nothing. So it was crazy because of that. But I got lucky because I just got to stay home. In Russia, there's really like severe consequences. If you have and you leave, they like track your phone and they call you every day. So I just had to stay at home for 2 weeks, and it wasn't too bad. I had maybe two or three nights with low grade fever. The worst was the fatigue. And the lower back pain was just absolutely horrible. It's like you got beaten with a stick. It was really, really bad. But in terms of being sick in general, it wasn't too bad at all. It was sort of like the flu, I would say. But on the way back, when I got back onto the ice, it took me a long, long time to, really recover. And at a certain point, they did some heart scans, and they said that my like capacity with my heart or my aerobic capacity was down. So they basically shut me down for the year. Because there was only I think a month left in the season, we were in last place at that point. So they're like, we don't want to risk anything. So basically, they shut me down at that point, and that was it. Which is weird because when I had the actual virus, it was very easy to get through. But then afterwards, the sort of they call long COVID is what affected me. But now I'm doing fine. I've recovered and I'm training fully, and my heart rate's back to normal. So thankfully, everything's fine. But no, at one point it was kind of scary. We were training and skating, and I would be doing things I regularly do, and I just feel like my heart rate was, at top. My, eyes would go dark, and it was for a little while, it was a bit scary, but obviously it got better, so I'm thankful for that.
Was it at that point that you returned home to Los Angeles, or did you stick it out until the season was officially over, then come home?
Yeah, I came back home. I actually came to Michigan because that's where I was living before. And then a few weeks later, I moved out west to Los Angeles because there was honestly no point in being there if you can't play, and they don't really have like any way of treating that over there, because in Russia, a lot of the teams, they don't have like a physio. They have a team doctor and then massage therapist. So like, for example, what I needed was like some sort of physical therapy, whereas I would, do some light bike, and then the next day they do some light exercise while they track my heart rate, all these types of things. And over there, it's just either a doctor who's ready to give you a painkilling shot or a guy who's ready to give you a massage. There's really no in between.
And one thing we definitely saw from you throughout the course of the season was you were very active on social media. That's been a pretty big part of your, I guess, year, so to speak. What's that been, what really got you into, becoming more active on social media? Was it more the, staying at home, or was it, just something that you've been, always kind of loved social media?
I've always enjoyed being on social media and just like expressing myself to a certain extent. But honestly, I just figured I have a lot to say and I have a platform, so I might as well share. And if people like it, they like it. If they don't like it, well, at least I like it. If I ever put out a tweet or something, it's not because I want to make, someone laugh. I put it out because I think I'm gonna enjoy it. It's sort of like how, Quentin Tarantino says when he makes a movie, he doesn't make it for an audience, he makes it for himself. And that's basically how I view these types of things. Obviously, I can't compare a full-on motion picture to a tweet, but it's just one of those things where like if you enjoy it, it's it'll most likely be successful. That's why I've been just having fun, and with that, I think it's something that most people should be able to do, and especially if you have a platform, you should use it for good and to use it to make people's days better.
Right. And now you're almost at 25K. And so obviously people are enjoying the content that you're putting out and feeling like they're getting to know you. And that's so rare in hockey where, players don't really share much of their personalities. What you see on the ice is pretty much it. So you kind of being vocal and being very authentic is very unique and very special at the same time. And so that's where a lot of or maybe in better words, the duration of this podcast is going to go to talking to your authenticity. So, I mean, speaking to that, away from your ice with both your teammates, your family, and on social media, you are known for, just kind of living freely and, being who you really truly are. And so, again, this goes to sharing your personality and character, and obviously not being ashamed of that, like you mentioned, just, getting to enjoy it personally. So, what was it that made you decide to just kind of live like that and you say, you know what, hey, I'm going to put out my thoughts and, just see what happens?
I don't even know what made me live like that. I've always just, I guess it runs in like my blood, because my dad, when he was in the Soviet Union, he put out an article in the newspaper, criticizing like a communist Soviet regime. And back then that was really dangerous, because for something like that, you can, be really punished. So honestly, the way I look at it is if I, speak out, or if I do something, like, what's the worst that can happen? Really, nothing really. As freedom of speech, so obviously, nothing too bad can happen in terms of that. But no, for me, I just look at it as, I'm a human being first. Like when someone asks me, are you a hockey player, I reluctantly say yes, because first thing I say is I'm a human. Second, I'm a hockey player. So I just want to show that human side, because honestly, that's who I am, and that's what I want to be remembered for, not for someone that, skated and whacked a puck around. That's a lot of people can do that, but not too many people can remember who they are as a human being. So for me, that's why it's important. But also, I look at other sports, I look at athletes who they create such a big platform for themselves. Like there are guys in the English Premier League, the soccer league, who have more followers than multiple NHL teams combined, and they're not even star players. They're average players who just have a personality, and they use that to grow the sport, make some money, but also they're doing so much good in the community as well. So it's like it's a win-win-win scenario. So I'm thinking, why can't I do that? Especially if no one in hockey is really doing that. I feel like if you're the first in something, you're always more successful at that. So I just thought, I like to express myself, I like to have fun, and if that makes other people, like the game more, makes other people, follow me or whatever, just enjoy it. Like just I've tweeted some things and people, literally say thank you, like you made my day. Just take something like that. It's so simple. Like it takes a second for me to write something, and for them, it like really means something special. So honestly, I just figured all those three things combined, and why not? It's supposed to be fun. It's a game at the end of the day, so why not treat everything else like fun?
Exactly. I mean, I think you see a lot of the time hockey more so than other sports. A lot of the time there's that stereotype that, you know, the players are boring. It's always generic answers in the media scrums and that kind of thing. And even on social media, you know, it's when a lot of the NHL players, for example, post, it's not, you know, maybe it's a activism related tweet or something like that, or a thank you post, but there's not a lot of personality in the messages.
No,
is that something growing up maybe that you always kind of noticed and wanted to change? Or is that just, you know, like you were saying before, you just kind of went out there and wanted to post a tweet, show who you were?
So basically my sister was in the broadcasting world for a while in hockey, and I would always, you know, pay attention to what guys would say, and it would always drive me crazy when they would ask him a question and the reply would be get pucks in deep, battle, 50-50 pucks battles. And like, that's just so stupid. Like that's not fun. It's not who I am. If you ask me a question, I'm going to have fun with them. I'm going to, you know, joke around a bit. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, to me, like, I think that the most important thing is if I play better when I'm having fun and when I'm enjoying the moment. I'm not going to play better when I just give you a blatant robotic answer. That's not who I am. But no, I just saw all that and I figured, like, why are people talking like this? Like, it's so boring. Like, show some personality, be a human being. So I thought, you know, when I get to that stage, I'm gonna have fun with it because that's who I am. I'm not gonna change my personality for, you know, to conform to society's norms. Like, that's just not who I am.
And I think the same kind of thing in relation to style. And I know in, you know, walking into the rink before a game and stuff, always, you know, players are wearing suits and you see in different sports, you know, some players like to wear, you know, designer clothes. Some just like to have those, you know, the typical suits and stuff like that. But again, you're one of those kinds of people that really likes to embody your style into both your game on the ice and off the ice. Do you have maybe a style icon, whether it's, you know, in hockey or maybe a celebrity, someone like that, someone who you've tried to embody their style a little bit?
In hockey, absolutely no one. But no, in terms of like a celebrity, I'm a big fan of, let's say, David Bowie, Mick Jagger, Harry Styles, up and coming right now, Machine Gun Kelly. Who else could I say? Probably those guys mostly, because I just love the way they dress. I love their just the confidence that goes behind it, and that's something that I don't try to copy them, obviously. I try to, you know, make it my own way. But at the same time, it's almost like you see what these, you know, like I want to say icons, like David Bowie is an absolute icon. You know, I obviously, I look up a lot of the stuff that he wore. I look up a lot of his interviews because I'm just so fascinated by a human being that was able to live so freely. And those are probably the guys I look up to. In terms of a hockey player, I actually thought of someone. I'd say probably Sean Avery. Mm-hmm. Because he was... obviously he had an internship at Vogue, which is like, you know, it's like a dream. That's pretty sick. And yeah, he's always on top of his fashion, of his style. And I really respect him because a lot of the times I follow him on Instagram and he'll tweet or not tweet, he'll put up a story of like, NHL Network, and he'll just rip the guy's outfit. He'd be like, EJ Redick, what are you doing? Hem those pants. Like, it's not 1971 or something. It's just like, stuff like that, that like I love because he's being honest, and it's like for real, EJ, like you should really like figure it out, bro. But no, I'd say those guys are definitely some of the people I look up to. And I obviously try to do sort of what they do, but also put my own twist into it. So it's, you know, it's also fresh, but also familiar.
That's fair enough. And I think that, again, when we talk about fashion and getting to express yourself, that falls right along those same lines. And it goes with personality as well, which is something I want to continue to touch on with you. So we take a look at, again, your kind of just free living personality, which you seem to pride yourself on, again, when we look at social media, which we'll continue to discuss. So, you know, where does that really originate from? And when I say that, I mean, talking more about, you know, your parents. I mean, who do you think you are more similar to in that way, and, you know, the way in which they express themselves, your dad or your mom?
Interesting. I always joke around because my parents are both kind of serious. I always say, like, was there a mailman involved or something in the marriage? But honestly, my dad, once you get to know him, he's a very funny guy. He likes to joke around. So I guess maybe a little bit of that. And my mom is blatantly honest. Like, she's like Sean Avery in terms of like ripping the guy on TV for wearing pants that aren't from this generation. So I guess a bit of that, but also I never really tried to be someone or copy my parents or anything like that. I've lived in a lot of places and I try to take the best from everywhere that I've lived. So basically, that's something that I really credit my, you know, my childhood to, because I was able to live in so many different places and I was able to learn from so many different cultures, so many different groups of people. So honestly, in terms of my parents, I'd say I'm pretty much, I wouldn't even say a split. I'd say if I'm 100%, I'd say 50% of is from my parents and 50% is just who I am. So it's kind of interesting because I think someone who I look up to a lot, or two people I look up to a lot, are my sisters. And those are two people that I obviously, you know, grew up with, because both my sisters are quite older than me. So they were almost like sister figures, but also kind of like, I don't say mother figures because they're only like 8 years older than me. But it was one of those things where like I would obviously look up to them as well. So it's like a mix of my family, but also all the cool, interesting places I've lived, all the interesting people I've met. And I just try to take the best from every environment, every situation, and, you know, implement that into my own life.
Building off of that, how you've been to a lot of interesting places, you know, you've traveled a lot, you've lived in a lot of different areas. Obviously this year, not being able to play in China. First of all, have you had the chance yet to go train with the team in China or anything like that?
No, I haven't been to China. I was supposed to go a couple of years ago when we were having an away game there when I played for a different team, but that's when like COVID happened, that was all canceled. But at this point right now, I'm a free agent and I don't think I'll be going back to Kunlun. So honestly, no plans to go to China in the future. Obviously, I'd love to see China as a country. It's just to visit because I'm very curious. I want to, you know, see pretty much every major country. That's something really important to me. But no, as of right now, not really any plans. But the guys, when they I talked to them about China, obviously, because I'm curious about it, they said it was really, really interesting because it was sort of like a mix of like super like high tech with like really like I don't want to call it third worldness, but like that's what, you know, the guys would say, because some places you would go and it's like the most high tech thing you would see, and then you drive 30 minutes the other way and it's like, you know, really not developed yet. So that's kind of interesting that you can experience both worlds in such a close distance. So as of right now, no plans, but definitely in the future, if there's an opportunity, possibility, I'd, you know, love to visit China and see all about.
And before signing with the team, was there any, you know, obviously whenever you go to a different country, there's kind of a different culture and it's especially different in China. Was there any kind of research on your part, trying to research more about the culture, maybe emulate it into the fashion and that kind of thing?
So when I was going over, the team was already in Moscow, but there's a lot of guys who have Chinese origin, that either their parents, themselves, their grandparents. So I did a lot of research in terms of that because I was just curious on where these guys came from, because I wanted to, you know, obviously know like their traditions, their what kind of food they like to eat. So in terms of that, I obviously did some research because I just wanted to be closer to my teammates when I got there. But in terms of actually like scouting, like you know, like locations or like restaurants, or that, I didn't really do too much because I knew that this season would be in Moscow and I'm pretty familiar with Moscow. So in terms of that, it was mostly just like learning about the heritage a bit, so I, you know, would be able to, you know, communicate with the guys better and be able to sort of understand where they're coming from.
Right. So with that, let's turn it back to social media a little bit, because I do want to focus on another app that you have been using in addition to Twitter, and that's TikTok, which you also make use of and has become very popular globally throughout the COVID-19 pandemic. So can you tell me a little bit about the decision to continue growing your brand in that way and why TikTok and the freedom that it allows you has, you know, attracted you to, again, kind of just, you know, have fun with it and really feel yourself more. And I guess in that way, also kind of learn more about yourself and what you're okay doing.
So, yeah, I think TikTok is one of the few social media platforms where you can pretty much do anything you want and there is really no judgment. So I feel like a lot of kids, especially in this generation right now, where there's so much judgment, so much pressure, they can go on TikTok and pretty much put out any content they like and not be judged at all. And I think that's great because nobody deserves to be made fun of. Nobody deserves to be judged. And when these kids are honestly in a safe space and they're able to be creative, I think there's nothing better than that. And for myself, I don't know, I just looked at TikTok as like something fun and just to make some videos and just to joke around a bit, because I enjoy creating content. I enjoy you know, just getting in front of the camera and doing something stupid, something silly. So for me, it was a no-brainer. When I saw, I had some friends who were like, oh, you should go on TikTok, you should go on TikTok. At first, I was kind of reluctant, but then I saw the actual thing, and I was like, I don't know. I'm pretty dumb, and I feel like I can I can work this thing. So I got on it, and it's been going pretty well ever since. I have a couple of drafts right now that I might release in a couple of days, but, you know, in terms of, you know, any fear of getting on, not really. It's for me, it's just some more fun and another way to connect with friends and, you know, just make some relatable content that people can watch and laugh or, you know, make fun of, whatever. It's for them to decide. But no, I think it's a great platform, especially for the younger generation.
And it allows people to get to know you more and to learn more about the authentic way in which you live your life. So I guess, you know, with that in mind, you know, that authenticity, I mean, it's something that's really special. And so how does your family kind of embrace that? And with that, I don't just mean your parents now. Let's talk about more about your sisters who you said you look up to. You know, do they get to have any experience and fun with you with this?
Kind of. One of my sisters had a TikTok account. They're both active on Instagram. So they, I don't know, a lot of times they're on board with it. I probably say most of the time because they know that's just, it's me being creative and that's who I am. But sometimes they, you know, they make fun of me a bit because like I like to do these cryptic Instagram, what's it called, captions where sort of like almost like subtweeting where people think it's one thing, but it's totally about a different person. And like, it's like a game of cat and mouse that, you know, only me and another person knows. But my sisters always make fun of me for that. They're like, who do you think you are? Blah, blah, blah. I'm like, it's just who I am. But no, they support me. My parents, I made a TikTok. It was like all the generations in my family that had pro athletes. And my dad saw that randomly. Some guy showed it to him at a hockey game. And he calls me. He was like, oh, I just saw the coolest video you made. I'm like, cool, man. Like, I appreciate it. But no, just like little stuff like that. My mom, she follows everything that I do. She will listen to every podcast, every video, literally everything that I put out. My dad's more of like, if he sees it, he sees it. Like, he's not really going out of his way. But like, if he does see it, he was like, oh, that's cool. Like, it's actually funny. I got a tattoo not too long ago on my stomach. And I didn't tell my dad because I was scared of what he would say. But he saw it on social media. One of his buddies sent it to him. And I come downstairs the next morning. He was like eating breakfast. He's like, so I heard you got a tattoo. And I'm like, yeah, I did. I show it to him. He's like, why didn't you get it colored or bigger? I was like, what? I was expecting him to be like, why'd you get a tattoo? You shouldn't be getting those. But no, in reality, he was like, you should have gotten it bigger or colored or whatever. So it was just one of those funny things. But no, like my parents, they've always been accepting of who I am. And, you know, they love that I'm creative and they love that I do these things. And my sisters, there are always people that I can bounce ideas off of because they're both really creative themselves. When one of my sisters is a producer, the other one is a makeup artist. So they're both in creative fields. And with that, I'm just able to have two sort of like, you know, people that I can talk to about anything, two people that I can, you know, relate any ideas to and always get like an honest answer.
Right. So let's talk more about creativity, because I was going to talk a little bit about your tattoos. You've got a lot of different tattoos that represent things from your family to just, you know, again, the free personality in which you live. So with that, you also have a merchandise line, as I understand, which is also part of attracting 25K followers on your Twitter as somewhat of a reward. So I want to talk about, you know, building your brand and helping to get your name further out. I've taken a look at some of the items such as sweaters and bags and whatnot. And so with that, you know, where did the idea come from to continue to enhance your creativity in that way? And can you discuss the freedom that it allows you to kind of, you know, grow and learn more about yourself?
So the clothing line, how that happened was a guy DM'd me on Instagram and he was saying, I do these things for these athletes. I create these logos and we put them on clothes, whatnot. And when he told me that immediately, I'm like, okay, I don't want to do it that way. I want to actually do it in a way where we create this logo and then I will design the clothing. I'll send it to you. And then we'll do sort of like a mix of what's already like generic, but also with what I designed. Because if I'm going to release something, I don't want it to be like boring, generic, like what everyone else has. I want to make it sort of different, sort of interesting. So in terms of that, I wanted to create something special, something unique. And there's a lot more on the way. right now. I think I have, I'm not even sure how many items there are on the website, but it's doing pretty well recently. So I'm hoping that with more releases, I want to do some special edition stuff, some, you know, some limited releases, hopefully grow some hype, you know, but no, in terms of that, it was just something where I see all these athletes making their merch and it's all just so boring and generic. And I was like, if you actually try to do something creative, like, you know, you could actually accomplish something special. So that's how I looked at it. And, you know, I just want to make something cool because I'm not making something for, you know, everyone to wear. I'm making something that I personally myself would want to wear. And I feel like if you do something that you personally yourself would like to wear, like I was watching an interview with Tom Ford the other day, and he was saying when he makes his clothing, he makes it because he knows that's something he would wear and something he would feel both sexy, confident, and just feel good. And that's what I want to do. I want to make these clothes where people can wear them and they can feel good, confident, you know, sexy in any other way they want to feel. So that's my biggest inspiration for that.
And building off of that, your number is a big part of a lot of your logos and on some of your clothes. Can you tell us a story about the number and why you wear it?
So basically, when I was signing with Kunlun, the equipment manager texted me, or it might have been the GM, I forgot who it was. And he's like, we have number 88, number, I think like 45, and number 52, and number 69 available. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know, 51 isn't too cool, 45 isn't cool, 88's kind of cool, been done before. And I was like, you know what? 69 is pretty cool. So I just chose that, you know, it's a pretty good number, you know, and impressed a couple of people that I was trying to impress at the time. And, no, it fits my vibe, I think, because it's just like such a free number. And it was funny when I told my dad I picked 69, he was like, 69. He had no idea what it meant. Cause in Russia, it means something totally different. He thought it was like 6 + 9, like equals like 15 or something. So you want to be number 15? I'm like, oh yeah, sure, whatever. But after a little bit of time, he understood what it really meant. But like for me, it was never like to make fun of something or to joke about like 69, like the sexual activity. It was more of just like the number itself, and like I said, to impress a couple people. But no, it was just all in good fun, because when I was going over to Russia, I was thinking like, I want to have fun with this. And if I have fun with this, I'll play better because I'll feel more confident. And I'll just, things will be way better that way. So that's why I just decided to do that, because at the end of the day, it's all about, you know, having fun. For me, if I'm having fun, I'm playing better. And that's why I wanted to do that.
I know. I think it's interesting because in certain sports, you know, like hockey in the NHL, it's pretty much nobody's ever really worn the number 16 on a regular basis. I mean, we've seen a couple, but in sports like football, I mean, there's, again, a lot of those players. So I guess it's pretty different depending on between sport to sport. And I know you've had some funny tweets about that. I mean, when I think Google put you as number 79, you had a pretty funny tweet about that. But another tweet that I personally really enjoyed was the Jumbotron tweet. I was wondering if you could take us on that little story.
Yeah, I was a little kid and I forgot how old I was. I think it might have been like 2003 or something. And I forgot where I was, but I just remember this perfectly. I saw a picture of that Jumbotron where it fell down in Buffalo. I think it fell down in like 96, and this must have been like 02 or 03. So it was like fairly fresh of a photo. So I saw that, and I, as a child, immediately I was like, I didn't realize it was in Buffalo. I didn't realize it was somewhere else. The first thing I thought was like, oh my God, this is where my dad works. Like that's a workplace hazard. So I just think like he can't play anymore because the thing's going to fall on him. Like, I just saw that as like an immediate danger, like that every time he goes to work, I have to worry about the thing falling on his head. And I don't even remember when I stopped being afraid of that, but like, I remember to this day, the moment I saw that, my initial thought was, that's where my dad works. He's in danger, you know? So I was like scared of that, but you know, it's to be honest though, like it's a giant thing that could fall at any moment. Like it's legit kind of terrifying if it does fall down, like even as an adult looking at it right now. But no, it was just like, yeah, as a kid, like you see a giant thing hanging on a couple wires or like whatever, like no, you're gonna be afraid, especially if you see a picture of it destroyed at center ice. So that's basically why I was afraid of it at that time.
Is that still something you're afraid of? Because you hit the ice and there's always one that's going to be above you. So what goes through your brain as you're playing a game? I mean, do you think about it anymore, or you just focus on playing your game?
Honestly, now I'm just trying to get on it, trying to get highlights on there or a close up, I give a good wink to the camera, something like that. But not too scared of it anymore. It's more of a it's a friend. We've it's a love hate relationship. We weren't too good of friends, but now we're pretty close, and we might take things a bit further.
Fair enough.
One other thing I want to touch on a little bit. I know we spoke a little bit about it before, but when it comes to, any form of social media posts, whether that be Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, I think a lot of the time, especially in today's day and age, tweets, anything that's said could come back to harm a lot of people, especially with bigger platforms. Have you ever really, had your finger about to press submit on a tweet or something like that, and then had to take a moment and say, you know what? Maybe this isn't the best idea to post, or you get a little bit nervous that it could come back and haunt you or anything.
A couple times that's happened, like with the Lil Nas X tweet, I was concerned about that a little bit. But then I reached out to some people that I trust, and I sent it to them, and I said, "What do you think?" And honestly, I didn't think there was anything wrong with the tweet because I was just defending an artist for, creating what he believed. And in terms of that, like, I didn't see an issue with that. So I figured if someone was pissed off about that, well, like, I'm sorry, but like, I'd rather be on the right side of history than someone who's, shunning someone for being themselves and showing that, like, in their entire life they've felt like because of their sexuality that society looks down on them. And I think that's horrible. Like, that's not how it should be. So I figured, like, if I could say something and defend a person like that, and someone, a young kid who's, unsure of their sexuality will read that and be like, we have an ally, we have like someone on our side, then yeah, like, I think that's worth it. But I don't really think I've ever had a tweet about anything controversial that I haven't, pressed send. I've had some tweets, some subtweets that I've wanted to send about, individuals, but like, I usually refrain from that. I'll be like, they're gonna know it's about them or something. But honestly, controversial or like anything political, haven't really done anything like that. But because usually when I do something political, I look at it from the side of what side of history do I want to be on? Do I want to be on the side of like of change and positivity or the side of negativity? And even if I'm on the side of change and positivity, and there was some backlash from the side of people that don't understand that, I'm all for it. That's worth it to me because, hopefully someone will read it and it'll help someone. And that's the most important thing in terms of tweets like that. But in terms of just like joking around or, being petty, sometimes I'm about to tweet something that I'm like, no, it's not a good idea.
Right. So with that, aside from social media, when you're just kind of home and away from the gym and just, truly being you, what else do you do now as your hockey season is over to kind of get through your days? Are you spending time with your family? Are you getting out within the community within, the margins that you're allowed given the COVID-19 restrictions? How do you spend a normal day?
Honestly, it's been pretty boring. But I work out 2 times a week at a gym. It's like a closed off. It's only me and the trainer, so it's one-on-one. And I do that twice a week. And then the other 2 days I train. I usually go for a run, and then I do a core circuit at home and some upper body body weight stuff. Then I just watch a lot of sports. That's a thing that I really enjoy. I like a lot of different sports. This morning I was watching some soccer, and then I just watch. I'm big on film and on television, like series and all that. So I watch pretty much anything that I can learn from, and that's basically what I do. I train. I obviously I see some family. I have my sister lives in town. My mom's in town right now, so I hang out with family. I have some friends here, which we hang out every once in a while. But no, it's honestly it hasn't been too bad. I feel like with social media and phones and all of that, you're still able to connect with your friends that don't even live with you. So that's awesome because I'm able to, still reconnect to my friends in Russia and my friends in Canada, in the East Coast of the United States, and just stuff like that. You're constantly able to, you're not together, but at the same time it feels like you're together. So it's nice that because of all these awesome, features of social media, text and whatnot, you're able to connect with so many people. And even if you're like, let's say you're at home, everything's closed, you can't go anywhere, you're still able to, just talk to some friends, have some fun in terms of that, watch a game with like your buddy over text or whatever. And and stuff like that is something that, you know, I've been doing a lot right now, honestly. And you know, it's been fun.
And you mentioned that you're an avid follower of sports during your downtime. And part of that has been the National Women's Hockey League and the NCAA through their March Madness tournament, both men and women. So I want to talk to you about your following more specifically of women's sports. And again, we're seeing that the NCAA women tournament was ongoing at the same time as the men. Then the National Women's Hockey League held their Isabel Cup, both in Lake Placid, New York, and then they finished in Brighton, Massachusetts. And you, at the end, voiced a congratulations to the Boston Pride. Then you said, the Toronto Six, let's go get it next year. So do you want to talk about where your interest lies within women's sports? And before I conclude, I'll tell you that I'm someone who works with the Toronto Six organization. So seeing that, I was like, I have to ask you about this. So, you know, where does that come from? And, you know, do you find enjoyment in all women's sports, or is it just, you know, whatever's on TV right now? How does that work for you?
So honestly, I don't watch too much hockey at home. I usually watch, I have a guy who sends me like, you know, cutouts, like every single shift of like Patrick Kane, every single shift of McDavid. Like, I don't really watch too many full hockey games. That's basically, I only watch it for the purpose of like watching players that I look up to and that I want to steal from, basically steal their moves, steal their, you know, the way they play. So honestly, I wasn't even, didn't even know there was like the playoffs were going on the Isabel Cup until someone tweeted me and they're like, you should check it out. So I did some research and for some reason I picked the Sixers to be my team. I don't know. I just like the name, I guess. That was kind of cool. So I did some research to watch some of their highlights, and I watched the highlights of the final game, looked at their Instagram, I looked at the Instagram of the league, and I was like, all right, this is pretty dope. So honestly, when next season picks back up, I'm going to, you know, watch a lot more than I did this year, because this year I only found out until like the last day. But the women's March Madness, like, first of all, their gym at the start of the tournament was an absolute joke. Like, I don't care about the argument of like who brings in more money or whatever. Like, honestly, like, you can find enough money to provide like a decent gym. It's not too difficult. Like, there's no excuse to not provide a good gym for these athletes. And that was something just horrible, especially after watching how they play and like watching the final, the championship game. It's like, there's some legitimate athletes. Like, you got to treat them like legit athletes. Just because like they say the women's game brings in less money, like honestly, it doesn't matter. They're still athletes. They're still doing their best. And there's still tremendous, tremendous athletes who bring in an audience. And at the end of the day, like, these universities make a ton of money. Like, let's say, I think Michigan was in the tournament. Michigan football makes more money than pretty much like anyone else. Like, they could chip in to help these people, these women, like with a gym or like all the other programs. So like, in terms of that, I think it's just being selfish of not wanting to, you know, just provide a gym for people, which is silly. Like, it should be for an athlete, that's like a basic right to have a regular gym, especially at such a big tournament that's literally on ESPN. And I think the final game had 4.4 million people watching it, which is a pretty big number. I mean, based on ratings alone, that's enough money to, you know, fund a gym, which is, again, shocking to me. But other female sports that I enjoy is figure skating. My mom was a figure skater, so whenever figure skating is on, I always watch that. I think the women are way more talented than the men in figure skating. It's incredible. Some of these girls are doing like quadruple Lutzes, and like, you know, not even most guys can do that. So I think that's absolutely amazing. They're super talented. There's a lot of young Russian girls who are figure skating right now on top of the world. And, you know, I look up to them. I think they're fantastic athletes. I was even last year at training camp with my old team, Ska. There was a training camp for the women's figure skating program in Russia at the same time. So all the like Olympians were there, and I was just watching them train and watching them, you know, skate. And it was absolutely stunning. These little girls, they were like 14 years old, like 4 feet 11, and they're jumping, doing four spins in the air. And I'm watching that. I'm like, how is that possible? Her legs are like this skinny, and they're generating so much force and so much power. So like, you look at these people and you can't look at them without saying, wow, these are world-class tremendous athletes. I mean, people don't appreciate that. You know, that's something that you know, quite frankly angers me, because just because you think that you're threatened by a woman being more talented than you, being more skilled than you, doesn't mean like you need to bring them down. Like, you need to give them a platform, give them an audience to show their talent and show what they can do.
And on that note, you know, growing up with, you know, influential figure skater in your life, Was that ever something that, you know, helped you when you were growing up playing hockey, or, you know, did you have an interest in, you know, learning how to, you know, do any of that? Because obviously we've seen hockey players like Jeff Skinner, who, you know, at a young age were training to be a figure skater because it helped them play hockey, and it was just also an interest of his. So was that ever something that, you know, you had to take some maybe lessons from or skills and try to incorporate that into getting you to the next level?
So what happened was when I was 14, I had two hip surgeries for torn labrums. And after that, I had to reconstruct my entire stride. And for almost a year, I skated without pucks because I wasn't allowed to pretty much do anything. And every day I would skate with my mom, and she basically set up my entire skating technique. So it's basically my entire skating technique comes from the school of like figure skating. And that's why I feel like a lot of people always credit me for having good, smooth skating. And all the credit goes to her. Like a lot of the days it's extremely boring when you're a 14-year-old hockey kid and you just want to, you know, shoot some pucks or, you know, play some scrimmages or whatever. But no, I remember I'm getting into plenty of arguments with her, yelling, saying, this is boring, I don't want to do this, like I hate this. But now looking back, I'm so thankful that she gave me these lessons that I'll have for the rest of my life. And it's honestly, I'm so lucky to have someone like that in my life that was able to help me so much. And I can't say enough good things about just the figure skating community. And I feel like every hockey player when they're growing up should definitely do some sort of figure skating to just get the basics of skating down.
For sure. And again, on that note, with the whole figure skating, did you ever try to do any of those, you know, triple twirls? I'm not very familiar with all the lingo in regards to figure skating, but some pretty complex stuff. Did you ever attempt any of those?
Yes. Usually when I'm on the ice with my mom, I'll mess around and I'll be like, look, triple axel, and I'll do like one flip or something. I'll be like, land with my arms out like that. But it's hard. Like even just skating and like pulling your leg up on one leg and like anything like that, it's a lot of work, and they make it look so easy. So like I've tried it to mess around, but like it is really difficult. Mm-hmm.
All right. So with that, I want to talk about back to men's sports. I want to talk more about the importance of relationships. And one of those important relationships that you have is with Arthur Kaliev, who is within the Los Angeles Kings organization in the United States. Can you talk about that, you know, loving, friendly relationship that you have with him, and kind of, you know, from a young age where that grew from, and, you know, do you still keep in constant contact with him?
So basically during this interview, when my computer dinged three times, those are all texts from him. Because we were watching the soccer game earlier, and then I'm like, all right, I got to go record this podcast. And he was all mad at me because he wanted to watch the game. So he was texting me like the score and saying like, this team is so bad, like blah, blah, blah. But I met Arthur when we were, I think he was 13 years old. He walked in the locker room, this skinny, skinny kid. He was wearing all designer clothes. I'm like, who is this kid? He's like, if you watch a Netflix show about the Russian mafia, that's like what the kid looks like. It's a skinny blonde kid with like Gucci shoes, like Montclair jacket, like Louis Vuitton hat. I'm like, all right, this is something interesting. He didn't talk at all the first couple of weeks. And then my dad was like, he's like, Artie, you're so skinny. You're like, in Russian, there's like the saying, like, you're skinny as a bike. So we said, you're skinny as a bike. And he was like, haha, bike. So since then, everyone calls him Bike. And then a few weeks later, we had a kid skating with us who looked like Mike Tyson, and his nickname was Tyson. So Bike would be like Bike Tyson, Bike Tyson. So basically his nickname grew to be Bike Tyson. And from that age, from since he was 13, and I think I was maybe 16, we've, you know, been on the talked every single day. We're like, I would say he's probably definitely my closest friend. Like we text for pretty much all day long, like about sports, about, you know, pretty much everything. And I'm honestly so lucky to have, like, he's honestly at this point, he's like a brother to me, and we hang out whenever they have a day off, and we always go to get lunch and just chill. Like the last time I was getting tattoos, he was there just watching, and he was just making fun of it. And like, it's just like, it's like a special relationship where it's more than a friend. It's literally family. And that's, I'm so lucky to have someone like that, where I never had a brother growing up, and I always wanted to have a brother, and luckily I had him, and now I know I have a brother for life. So it's definitely a special relationship, and I'm so happy for how he's progressing and how he's doing, and, you know, he's only gonna get better, and there's only gonna be more success for him in the future.
And maybe you might be able to give us a little exclusive info here. Do you know if the name Bike has stuck with him with the LA Kings organization?
I don't think so. It's mostly with the Russian group. That's pretty much everyone who we know mutually calls him Bike. So I'd probably say there's probably about 300 people that know him as Bike, but the rest of them, I think, just call him as Artie, which is honestly, to me, Artie is such an insult because it's such a boring nickname. Like, Bike or Artie, that's like, I mean, come on, Bike is way cooler than Artie. But no, it just goes back to hockey, man. You got to be more creative when you come up with nicknames. Like, obviously, calling someone named Arthur Artie is pretty similar, but calling someone Bike who's named Arthur, that's way off the map, and that's what we need.
Right. So with that, let's kind of bring this to a close, because I've only got one more question left for you. And again, we thank you for your time that you've spent this afternoon to chat with us. So that being said, talking about your dad, who kind of helped grow that nickname for Kaliev, I want to talk about the relationship that you have with him. And your dad is the head coach of Russia's U-20 team. So, you know, what kind of influence has your dad had on your hockey career from a point of helping you to grow in your young career in terms of advice, in terms of actually helping you on the ice? You know, especially because your dad's got a long history in hockey and can lend that, you know, that support and, you know, all sorts of tips and information to you. So, you know, what does that look like?
Honestly, I wouldn't be anywhere without him, because from a young age, he's been on the ice the probably close to 1,000 times. And just the constant tips, the hours of training, the watching games with him, watching shifts with him, all these different things. He's taught me so much as a hockey player, but also taught me so much as a human being, to just be a good person, you know, treat people for their character, not for who, you know, they are. And it's such an important thing to me that my father is someone that I can, you know, I can talk to, I can, you know, almost be like a friend with. And even this morning he called me about the soccer game again. He's like, so who do you think is going to win, blah, blah, blah. And just like little conversations like that. It's so special knowing that someone like that is, you know, is always in your corner. And in terms of hockey, like I said, so many hours spent on the ice, so many hours spent in the gym. And I credit everything to him. And like, also a guy like Bike, he also says that he wouldn't be anywhere without my dad and like all these other guys that he's helped throughout his life. And it's just, we're honestly all so lucky to have someone that, you know, just cares about us so much and helps us so much. And honestly, I really don't know where I would be without his help, without his support, without all the tips, all the techniques he's taught me. It's, you know, it's truly special and something that I, you know, I cherish. And a lot of the times it's a bit of a burden because people see my name and they automatically associate me with my dad. But honestly, the pros outweigh the cons in terms of that. So I'm just glad and I'm thankful and I'm happy that he's, you know, he's been such a huge part of my life. It's a huge part of my, you know, development as a hockey player, my development as a human being, and my emotional development.
And I think outside of, you know, the hockey standpoint, you mentioned a few times now the soccer fan in you and how you share that with your dad. What's your soccer team? Before we close this off, I have to ask.
Yeah. So basically, when my dad was, I think in the 90s or something, he knew this Russian soccer player who was on Man United. Mm-hmm. So he became a fan of Manchester United because of that, because of the familiarity of that. So when I was born, my first picture was in a Manchester United jersey, not in a Red Wings jersey. So I was a Manchester United fan since pretty much day one. There's a picture of me. I think I'm like maybe half a year old. I'm wearing a full Manchester United kit with the shorts, the socks, the cleats, the jersey. So I've been a fan for almost 23 years now. And I don't think that's ever going to change. You know, I'm not the type of person that, you know, changes up a team because they're doing poorly or anything like that. I'm sticking with them forever. And, you know, I love the journey.
All right. So with that, I'm just going to leave you with one last thought. And that's because of the influence that your dad has both from a human perspective and a hockey perspective. So what are the three biggest takeaways that you extract from your father, you know, speaking from that standpoint?
The three biggest things that I've taken from my father are probably being, in terms of a hockey player, it is to always enjoy yourself, always to have fun and work hard, because at the end of the day, if you enjoy yourself, it won't feel like work, even at the toughest times, even at the darkest moments, because the most important thing about hockey is that at the end of the day, it is a game and you play it because you love the game and you want to have fun. So in terms of being a hockey player, the biggest piece of advice is just to always have fun and to believe in yourself. And then in terms of being a human being, he always just taught me to treat people with respect, treat people with kindness. It doesn't matter what your background is, doesn't matter the color of your skin, religion, sexual orientation. None of that matters. The only thing that matters is your character and what kind of person you are. And if you're a good person, you know, you got to treat someone with respect. That's the most important thing that, you know, he's taught me, because, you know, there's a lot of prejudice in the world and a lot of people that judge people. That's something that, you know, we look down upon in my family, because, you know, if someone's a good person, it doesn't matter what their background is, you treat them like a good person because of who they are. And then lastly, I'd probably have to say, just to cherish your family members, your loved ones, your friends, because you never know when, you know, that could all end, or you could lose someone or anything like that, because every day is special with the people that you love. And there's never a dull moment with your loved ones, your family members, or your friends. So always cherish those moments, because they're so special. And one day you're going to look back at that and say, wow, you know, I had so many awesome memories with so many great people. And that's just one of the three things that he taught me. I really try to implement that in my life. You know, every moment with a friend, every moment with a family member is something that, you know, I really, really treasure.
Beautifully said, Igor. So with that, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. We really appreciate your time. And before you leave, I want to make sure that I'm able to, you know, at least kind of help pay back the favor and doing that by promoting you. So that being said, where can your fans and followers continue to find you and the authentic person that is you on social media?
All right. So my Twitter is Igor_Larionov, LL. The LL is for the Roman numerals. And then my TikTok and my Instagram are Igor_Larionov_LL, once again, for the Roman numeral. And yeah, once you find one of those, you know, just go into my bio. I have a link tree set up. You just click that and you can find all my other socials, all the other things I'm passionate about. I have some links for, you know, the stopping the hate on Asian people right now. I have some links for Black Lives Matter and for the LGBTQ+ community. So yeah, guys, just if you find my one of my, you know, accounts, just click on that. You'll find more of me, but also some charities that I, you know, I get behind, and something that, you know, hopefully we can all read about and learn about and, you know, help some people.
Fantastic. And we understand that you also have some drafts on the way on your TikTok page. So we'll definitely be looking out for those. But other than that, thank you again so much for joining us today on episode 39 of the Puck Authority podcast. Listeners, make sure you are following Igor Larionov on those respective social media channels so you can learn more about him, and onwards and upwards to next season and beyond. Igor, stay healthy and safe. And thank you again for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
It's absolutely our pleasure. From David Siss and Igor Larionov, I'm Justin Levine, your host and managing editor. Until next time, social distance, wash your hands, stay safe, and we'll see you again soon.